Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Hemp has long been described as a miracle product for its myriad uses, but for much of the 20th century, its production here was either banned or tightly controlled because of its relationship to marijuana. But in 2018, that changed. Hemp became fully legal due to provisions of that year's Farm Bill, which removed hemp from the Controlled Substances Act and reclassified it as an agricultural commodity. It defined hemp as cannabis with 0.3% or less of Delta-9 THC. We'll get into all of this. What came next was an explosion, not only of production, but of products readily available in North Carolina and elsewhere. Today, hemp is a multi-billion dollar industry. Our state ranks sixth in production of hemp-derived products, with over 800 licensed growers and 8,000 industry workers. But all of that is now in jeopardy. The most recent government funding package seeks to adjust regulations and would effectively ban most hemp-derived products like gummies, drinks, and vapes. And despite the regulatory framework created by the 2018 Farm Bill, critics, including North Carolina Governor Josh Stein, say what's happening in that industry is like the Wild Wild West. This hour, a closer look at the hemp industry, what it produces, why it remains controversial in some circles, and at what might happen as a result of new government regulations. We're joined by Phil Dixon, Jr., a teaching associate professor of public law and government at the UNC Chapel Hill School of Government. Nicole Burnett is owner and founder of Queen Hemp Company. That's a Charlotte-based indoor farm that, among other products, produces hemp, which it supplies to wholesalers and has its own retail online outlet. And Steve Harrison is with us. He reports extensively on this industry for WFAE News. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. Welcome. Happy New Year.
Good morning. Thank you for
having me. Good morning, Mike.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Steve, I'm starting with you. Our state began cultivating hemp under a special pilot program the federal government set up in 2017. Then along came the 2018 Farm Bill that set a course for hemp expansion. That bill also included inconsistencies in both federal and North Carolina law. Consumption of marijuana for recreational use remains illegal in our state, but hemp products can contain, as I said, up to 0.3% of THC. Could it be argued that even though the THC content of those products is lower, people are using hemp products for reasons similar to or identical to why they would use marijuana? Is that part of the problem here?
I think that's a fair statement. I mean, whether it's a problem or not, I mean, I think that's up for debate, but North Carolina is a very interesting state because, Mike, like you said, recreational marijuana is illegal and also medical marijuana is legal. So we are one of the strictest states in the entire country in terms of marijuana. And then at the same time, over the last 4, 5, or 6 years, we have now have one of the largest and most freewheeling hemp markets in the country. And there are, while other states have moved to regulate, North Carolina has not. The General Assembly has not done so. So we have this massive market. I mean, if you're in Charlotte, you drive around, there are billboards on the interstates for stores selling intoxicating hemp products. You can buy the drinks at Total Wine and Fresh Market. I just think it's fascinating that we have, on the one hand, a very, very conservative anti-marijuana state, and then on the other, a very large and expansive line of products like THCA and these drinks that people are selling and enjoying and buying, and it's a huge industry.
Well, the intoxicating is the word, I guess, the key word here. In your reporting, you have spoken to people who run these stores that sell gummies and candy and flowers and drinks that have a THC content, and one of the products that you can buy illegally contains THCA, which is fine if you consume it as an edible, but if you burn it like a marijuana cigarette, it converts to Delta-9 THC and has the same effect as smoking marijuana, and yet it is completely legal. Was that an unintended or unacknowledged or unknown consequence when current regulations went into effect in this state, Steve?
I think it's probably fair to say that that was not expected when you go back to 2018 when the Farm Bill was updated. I think that that was probably not what people had in mind when the law was updated. And like you said, THCA, when you light it on fire, it becomes essentially Delta-9 THC. It can be very intoxicating. You go in stores and there's like kind of a menu written with the percent of THCA, 20%, 25%, 30%, et cetera. I think it's fair to say that 7 years ago or now 8 years ago, people cannot envision the direction the market would go.
Phil, let me ask you, go ahead. Go ahead, Nicole.
I do agree that that probably was not something that they thought about. However, the way that the law was written does allow for that. No post-harvest testing. There's a certain period in which the crop, if you go into flower, needs to be tested. And, you know, knowing the grow, they were fully aware that these products increase in potency as they mature. And I do think that they understood on some level that there were psychoactive properties in the plant and knew that some of that was going to be available.
If not right away, certainly after a few years, right?
Phil, she used the word they, and this is the fact that the hemp industry is thriving is due, as I said, to the 2018 Farm Bill, which was a congressional bill passed in Washington. Did the people voting then in Washington on this understand this, do you think? Phil?
I mean, my sense is that the primary driver for it was really CBD and similar non-intoxicating cannabinoids. But as Nicole points out, I mean, as soon as the definition was written so broadly, pegging, you know, strictly the only difference between legal and illegal cannabis is the Delta-9 THC, and Delta-9 THC specifically, that definition allows for a myriad of other types of cannabinoids, many of which, as Steve notes, are intoxicating.
And Nicole, you grow this stuff, so and you manufacture and sell to wholesalers, and I'm not sure, and we'll talk about the chain of custody here about who decides what the power and strength of these products are when they eventually reach the consumer in a moment. But right now, it is set at 0.3% of THC. That's the legal limit. What happens if that content is raised to 0.4% or reduced to 0.2%? How do all these formulations work? How do they compare with what's in a marijuana product?
Well, that's where it gets really complicated, and it's very confusing, I think, for the consumer. Really, what's missing in this industry is a dedication to labeling, like what exactly is in there and the percentages. And often you'll see products that aren't, they don't have labels that are apples to apples. It's not presented in a way that a consumer would understand one product to another product, what exactly is going on in there. And I would like to point out too that the percent is, at least according to federal, it's percent to weight, to dry weight. And that's why you're seeing some of these products have more than really is possible, that you would think is possible. And they never accounted for isolating some of these cannabinoids singularly to use in products.
Who helped them write this bill?
Bill.
You got me there. I mean, I think Senator McConnell from Kentucky was originally a primary driver of the 2018 Farm Bill, and he was also the senator, as I understand it, who inserted this new provision, effectively banning it at the federal level in late 2025.
So he's had an about face on this. Steve, hemp is a $6 billion a year industry in the nation. How important is it to the North Carolina economy?
I mean, I think even the $6 billion, I think I've seen numbers saying that the entire industry, the entire kind of commercial or you know, products, the products are now up to 28, 30 billion And North Carolina is a very, very large hemp producing state. So there's a lot of jobs at stake on the retail side and then also on the growing side. So it's a very big deal here. And then if you go back, you know, we were talking about in Kentucky, Senator McConnell had was really responsible for this looming ban that will go into effect in November. The other Kentucky Senator, Ron Paul, fought really hard against it. And he was kind of sticking up for the hemp farmers in Kentucky, where a lot of people feel that Mitch McConnell was pushing the ban at the behest of the alcohol industry. Jack Daniels is a huge employer in Kentucky as well. So many different interesting political alliances in this story. Yeah.
Nicole, there are about 8,000 to 9,000 people employed in North Carolina in this industry. Clearly, they are not all farmers. They are retailers and other people who manufacture the final product. You work with them. And if you walk around Charlotte, if you drive around Charlotte, there's a store on every corner that's selling these products, it seems. How are these workers spread through the economy?
Well, they're very integrated into the economy. They're growers. There are just staff people. There are people that are involved in production, in harvest, in formulating the whole science end of it, coming up with these products and manufacturing them. And I'd like to point out, too, that not all of these dispensaries, so to speak, get their products here. I mean, some of them are coming from outside, like, for instance, Colorado. And again, I think that's where the consumer really needs to advocate for themselves and look at packaging. And if they don't see what legitimizes what's in there and can't trust where it's coming from, then that says something. And I do think, like, for example, we have packaging that disclaimers and not for children, keep out of way of children, and must be 21 to consume. All of these policies kind of need to take a more formal shape, I think. And it's also worth noting that North Carolina, I mean, look at the Cherokee Nation, which, you know, is obviously a federal, they are operating on a federal provision that they are allowed to grow, but that it's in North Carolina. And without access, if we just completely demolish the industry, it's not going to disappear. Right. Virginia. Oh.
We asked the Attorney General, Jeff Jackson, to join us on this program today. We've asked him to be on the show many times in the past, and for some reason we can't make connections with him. But we wanted him on today, Steve, because he joined with 38 other attorneys general around the country in writing a letter to Congress urging an end to this loophole created by the 2018 Farm Bill. What exactly is the loophole?
So the loophole, I think Nicole and Phil talked about it a little bit earlier, but it essentially allowed, you guys may be better at explaining than me, but essentially the current prohibition or the current definition of marijuana is that there's a limit of the amount of Delta 9 THC in the plant. And what the Farm Bill allowed was different higher levels of different kinds of THC than the very narrow Delta 9. And what the McConnell McConnell's legislation did back in November was it placed very strict limits on all types of THC. So it really will shut down the industry. I'd reached out, the Arkansas Attorney General was really spearheading a lot of this effort. And like you said, Jeff Jackson signed on, but I don't think it's really a critical issue for him.
We have to take a break. I think we need to define some of this THC stuff, and we'll do that when we come back in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcltregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about a law that may go into effect in November that will completely change the landscape when it comes to hemp-based products being sold here and around the country. And we're talking with it about it with Phil Dixon, who is a teaching associate professor in public law and government at the UNC School of Government. Nicole Burnett is the owner and founder of Queen Hemp Company. They grow and distribute hemp to wholesalers. And Steve Harrison has reported on this extensively for WFAE News. We were talking about the loophole that they want to close with this new provision in November, Phil. So there's a lot at stake here. What exactly, if this loophole is closed, which products exactly will now become illegal to sell and disappear from shelves, and how vast will the impact actually be?
Well, those are two maybe different questions. My reading of it is I think it will outlaw most all consumer hemp products, including non-intoxicating hemp products like CBD. And that's because there is waste THC that is created when you make a pure CBD product, as I understand it. I'm sure Nicole could correct me if I'm wrong. And so we've gone from zero regulation to almost a total ban that I think sweeps in far more than the intoxicating products that were ostensibly the justification for it. But the big question in my mind is, you know, assuming Congress does not act to amend this law or change things, the question becomes, what's the extent of federal enforcement going to be in states like North Carolina, where we have a legal scheme and people like Nicole are operating in accordance with state law?
But our state law hasn't changed. Doesn't federal law trump state law?
I mean, that's a tricky question. They have jurisdiction. They would have jurisdiction because of how federal law works with things that affect interstate commerce. It's been interpreted very broadly for a very long time, which gives them sort of concurrent jurisdiction over things like drugs and guns. But generally, law enforcement, local law enforcement, is a matter for the state and for state and local authorities. The FBI doesn't come arrest you for smoking a joint, usually, right? That would be a local police officer who's going to do that. And this is reminiscent of, I think we're headed towards a situation, again, without any sort of federal legislative change, similar to the early days of legal marijuana, where states authorized legal marijuana, people operated in accordance with state law, and occasionally, not all the time, but sometimes the DEA or some other federal law enforcement agency would come and raid the shop, or simply do a civil forfeiture of all the products and take the money even without charging someone. That's another thing that the federal authorities can do. There are tax issues with it. There are all kinds of banking problems as well.
Which we will talk about. We're throwing around all these different terms, CBD, THC, THCA, Delta 9, Delta 10. We haven't talked about those yet, but I'm sure we will. The flower products that are being sold at these dispensaries. Nicole, take us through these various terms, what they mean, and what products they are contained in.
Well, the flowering bract, which is the flower part as you're growing out the plant, that is what is used to create the products. It is extracted in a number of different ways, some more cleanly than other. And when you're talking about a full spectrum, which is what's considered the most beneficial way to do CBD, for example, there is a certain level of THC, as Phil suggested, and you can only go a certain milligram before it becomes above that threshold that the federal guidelines have set in place. And then that's what we're talking about, is that product is a full spectrum product. Now, there are 30 isomers in industrial hemp that are psychoactive. So all of those, as you mentioned, some THC, THCA, THCO, all of these have psychoactive properties. Some of the products that are being currently made legally, such as Delta 8, are extracting that single molecule, and it's not synthetic, it's synthesized, and it is currently legal. And that's where really the dilemma is. Because I do think, and we have two different types of consumers. We have a wellness group of people that are plant enthusiasts and really into whole plant wellness. And then we also have, and there are a group of people that are into more recreational experiences. And it's not, and as it stands, it's not illegal. And yes, if this does come into effect, it will be incredibly devastating to the community.
We can debate all day whether the farm bill that allowed all this to happen in 2018 is a good idea or a bad idea, or whether they have the right levels of THC regulated. But let me ask you this, as somebody who's in the industry, Nicole, do you believe that at the moment your industry is sufficiently regulated, and do you believe that your industry is following the regulations as they are currently set out?
So I am going to say that I know we get audited, we have inspection, we have to report to a number of different agencies locally and federally. We also have to have testing done on these products. Most of the people that we wholesale to and work with locally and as other businesses as well are doing this on the level. I do think that there is a discrepancy in the way that these products are labeled. And I think that would be a way to put some more regulation in place that's consistent across the board. But I mean, as a whole, I think that we are doing the right thing. It is, I will just say this too, it's incredibly difficult for a grower, even growing the same strains year over year, if you change some of those variables like the lighting, the humidity, the temperature, that can cause that plant to run hotter than it might otherwise would. And that's where this is very tricky. I do think there's an awareness of this. And also when you think about it too, when you have a plant and then you extract the crude is what it's called. So crude from that, those flowering bracts, and then you have this concentrate. Well, at that point, that concentration is technically illegal. But in order to make all these other products, that's just part of that manufacturing chain. And so that is where I'm pretty curious about how they're going to handle that.
So I asked the question about whether or not your industry is following the rules as they are currently set out, because this is what Governor Josh Stein told WRAL-TV last year.
We've got kids able to buy intoxicating cannabis, THC. We've got adults buying it with having no idea what's in that product. There are no labeling requirements. We have no idea what the concentration of THC is.
Attorney General Jeff Jackson says, quote, it's too easy for kids to walk into a gas station and buy a product that is unregulated and could be really harmful for them. We need some federal protections on this to keep our kids safe, and I'm asking Congress to step in here. That's a quote. Steve, why turn to the federal government? Why hasn't the General Assembly dealt with this on the local level? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there have been bills introduced in Raleigh to regulate, to put more regulations in the industry. I mean, a big issue is that there is no age limit on purchasing the products. Now, all I have to say in reporting these stories over the last several years, I've never gone to a store that allows anyone to come in. I mean, they check your license. And so I think there's a lot of, I think that the industry is trying to do a lot of self-policing. But
so is the governor wrong? Because when he was talking about kids walking into stores and buying these products and adults not knowing what's in the products, Nicole was saying no. She was shaking her head no. Is the governor wrong?
I just don't see that is. I think that's dramatizing what's going on. I mean, can kids get access if they really wanted to? I suppose. But again, as Steve said, a lot of these businesses are, you know, checking IDs. It's kind of like the tobacco industry. That's also regulated by age and alcohol. I don't see where this is that.
Phil, why is this so difficult, Phil? I mean, if we have rules that set the amount of THC that can be in a product legally, we have the pharmaceutical industry that puts out products that are exactly prescribed to the milligram. Why can't this be done by this industry? Why is this difficult?
Well, I think it can be done, and I think many retailers and distributors and producers are doing exactly that. They sell what they claim it is. They've tested it. They've gone through some quality control measures, but there is definitely no age limit under federal or state law for anyone to purchase or possess this. But Nicole's right. No one, I've never seen anyone who is actually selling to children, but occasionally I get calls from law enforcement that say, "What's the charge? I caught some 15-year-olds with a bag of Delta 8 gummies, and it's not a crime." And similarly, there's no standardized quality control, packaging, labeling requirements, that sort of thing, which my sense is the hemp industry largely supports. But there is probably a middle ground to be found between a total ban and some reasonable regulation.
And Phil, as Steve pointed out, even if this ban goes through in November, it would even end the sale of a lot of non-intoxicating hemp
Yeah, I think so.
products. Which brings up the obvious question, it seems to me. Why would you buy a non-intoxicating hemp product? What's the point? It's like buying a lollipop.
Nicole alluded to that before. These non-intoxicating products, at least the proponents and industry advocates, think there's health or wellness benefits to it. You see them, these non-intoxicating cannabinoid products often marketed as sleep aids, relaxation aids. I mean, they sell them for as doggy treats to calm your nervous animal. I think there is still some effect. It's not an impairing effect.
Yeah. So,
And we have
Steve, part of
studies on this.
the other
There are
part.
studies, scientists exploring this, and we have that have published papers in specifically University of South Carolina. Dr. Nagarkoti has done extensive studies on different cannabinoids, CBD in particular, and reducing internal inflammation. I mean, it's absolutely being used for wellness.
Part of the problem here, Steve, that we haven't talked about yet is that this recent legalization of these products has caused some problems from the law enforcement. If you burn some of this stuff, or even if you don't, some of it smells and looks exactly like marijuana. So if a police officer comes up to you, they can't tell the difference. And we talked about this when the laws first changed. Has that proven to be a significant problem?
I don't know if we can say a significant problem, but it has been a problem. I remember it was about 2 years ago. My memory may be getting fuzzy, but we had that incident in Charlotte, in Southwest Charlotte, where the woman was waiting for a bus. She just gotten off work from Bojangles and was smoking, either a marijuana cigarette or a THCA cigarette, and they smell the same. And a police officer came up and, asked, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Oh, this is THCA." I'm not sure if the officer really knew what that was at the time. And it led to this a terrible confrontation where she's put under arrest, thrown on the ground, et cetera. So, it's if you're a police officer, it's incredibly difficult. You can't tell the difference from the smell. You just
No.
can't. And if you go in, a lot of places in Charlotte now, uptown Charlotte, I mean, it's like a very potent smell of either marijuana or legal hemp products. And, I mean, CMPD has really pulled back in general on enforcing marijuana anyway, even before 2018 Farm Bill, but it is now made it basically impossible to stop people, at the individual level for smoking.
And here's another law enforcement problem that Governor Stein recently spoke about with WRAL TV.
If people are out there driving and they're high, law enforcement needs to have the test to know whether this person has committed a crime. Right now, with alcohol, it's pretty easy to determine if somebody has alcohol in their system when they're driving badly. With marijuana, it's very difficult. So we need to invest in the equipment for law enforcement to be able to ensure that the safe public is safe, because today they're out there high with products that they bought lawfully at a store, and we have no way of enforcing the law against them.
So, Phil, do we have any statistics that would indicate just how serious a problem that is?
Not that I'm aware of, but I mean, drugged driving has always been an issue, whether we're talking about marijuana or anything else. And I don't think it's quite accurate to say there's no means of enforcing impaired driving laws against people under the influence of cannabis, you know, people exhibit, there are officers who are trained to recognize drug impairment. There are field tests that can be done and examinations of a person that can be performed. They give you a
Except
pretty good
idea. The governor is saying that we don't have the police officers don't have the proper
it's
equipment.
Not, it, it's not, it's much more complicated than a normal drunk driving case where you can blow into a roadside field test, get a pretty good idea of whether the person is over the limit or not, and then there's a formal breathalyzer test once you're taken into custody. There's not really a similar, there's no such similar test for this. And we don't have a limit. You know, 0.08 is the blood alcohol content limit for impaired driving. Some states have set a THC limit as well, but we don't have that. So it's sort of, can you convince the fact finder that the person was under the influence? And I mean, many times the person admits, like, yeah, I've been smoking pot. And they look impaired, they're acting impaired, that probably gets you there in most cases, but it's not as simple as, well, they're over the limit, so therefore you can find them guilty.
It would seem obvious on the face of it, Nicole, that if you spend the afternoon smoking marijuana or ingesting marijuana in some other way in sufficient quantities and you get in the car and drive, you're probably driving impaired. Is the same thing possible to that degree through the consumption of the products we're talking about this morning, these cannabis-based legal products?
Certain ones, yes, that contain those psychoactive compounds. Yes, that's possible. Because while you know, you
why
can
are
take...
We allow, why are we allowing this? In other words, if we have laws against marijuana and the same effect is happening through these cannabis-based products, it seems dichotomous, if that's a word, to allow these products to be sold if we don't let marijuana being sold?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, and I will say the public support and the number of states that already have a legal, legal access, I wonder what is the thing that it's going to take, especially for medical. That's been proven too. Benefits of pain reduction, appetite increase for those people that are under treatment for cancer. There are so many wellness applications. It is, and do people abuse that? Sure. Are they pushing the limits just to get high? There are those, but I just really feel the vast majority are not wanting to do that.
When we come back, I want to talk about children and these products, because there seems to be a concern about children getting their hands on these, and in fact they do, and we'll talk about that in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the upending of the hemp industry by a provision in the latest spending bill passed toward the end of the year in Congress that would essentially sunset this industry in November by making a lot of what's being sold now illegal. Phil Dixon is with us. He is a teaching associate professor of public law and government at the UNC School of Government. Nicole Burnett is the owner and founder of Queen Hemp Company, and Steve Harrison is a reporter here at WFAE News. Steve, let's talk about the intersection of these products and children. Part of the rationale that was used by Senator Mitch McConnell, who is the driving force behind the insertion of this provision in the spending bill, were statistics from the Kentucky Poison Center showing cannabis-related calls more than doubled over 5 years. He insists that nearly 40% of the center's THC-related calls in 2024 involved children under 12, with most hospitalizations linked to THC gummies marketed in packaging resembling candy. Do we know if we are experiencing something similar in this state?
I have not seen statistics in North Carolina about similar problems. It stands to reason that that would, if it's an issue in Kentucky, that it would be an issue here as well. And I think that goes to some of the things that Nicole talked about, I think a lot of the industry is really okay with some level of regulation in terms of packaging and age limits, et cetera. And in fact, there's a In Congress now, the two Democratic senators from Oregon have introduced legislation to repeal the November ban, but also replacing it with a lot of regulation for things like that, for age and packaging, things like that. In South Carolina, House Member Nancy Mace has proposed just a total repeal of the McConnell ban. So there are, I guess we're about 10 months out, and we'll see if there's any agreement, if Congress comes to any kind of agreement on this.
Nicole, from your experience, since you deal in the retail industry or with retailers and wholesalers, are these gummies, for instance, packaged in a way that are attractive to children? And is part of the problem the fact that once these gummies are out of whatever packaging they're in, they're gummies?
Yes, that is the concern, I think, for the, you know, for this conversation. Yes, there are companies out of California that just package differently. I mean, I know our approach is to take more of a medical or wellness. And so we have tamper-proof packaging, child safety warnings, must be 21 to purchase. Also, the symbol, the warning symbol that this does include a psychoactive compound. Not all of our products do, but some do. And that's
when you take them out of the packaging and they're sitting on the dresser, they're a gummy. They look like candy.
Yeah. Well, this is in the same way where, you know, you have parents at home and have access to alcohol in the refrigerator or wherever. I mean, we're talking about a level of responsibility that not only should be placed on the manufacturer and the business itself, but also the consumer.
And Phil, the governor spoke about kids walking into these stores and being able to buy these products. In 2019, in December of 2019, Donald Trump, in his first administration, signed a law that officially raised the age for purchasing tobacco products from 18 to 21. Is there no age limit on the sale of these products in these stores that we're talking about this morning, Phil?
There is no age limit under federal or state law, but that said, I have yet to see a hemp store that, you know, welcomes children inside and sells them the products. They just reputable stores at least do not do that. I think.
But if a child were to walk in, would they just turn them away?
Yeah, that's what happens. I mean, most of the stores have a sign on the front door that says you must be 18 at least to enter, or you must be 21 to purchase. The intoxicating products.
Is that different?
Well, as Steve said, that's self-policing. That's not because of federal or state law.
But if you can buy them at gas stations, are they operating in the same way that these dispensaries are operating?
I see the same warnings at gas stations that say, you know, we're not selling these products. These products are for 21 and up. But again, that's a matter of individual store policy.
Is the same thing
federal state law?
Is the same thing true about vapes? Vapes come in a lot of different varieties, including those that contain nicotine, which is, of course, the active ingredient in a cigarette or tobacco product. How would a parent who allows their child to vape know if they are vaping a nicotine or a CBD product or just a product that has flavor and aroma?
They probably smell a little different. Usually, I mean, a lot of the cannabis vapes smell a bit like marijuana or cannabis. Whereas, you know, the tobacco vapes tend to smell like fruity flavors and different things. But yeah, I mean, short of seeing the packaging, I'm not sure there's a real easy way to do it. I do believe federal law treats nicotine vapes as cigarettes for purposes of federal law. So they're covered by the tobacco age limit, but we do not have a similar age limit in place under federal or state law.
And apparently, at least according to one of our emailers, one of our listeners, the regulations are enforced with a lackadaisical approach.
There aren't many regulations. I mean, the FDA has issued a few saying we don't want this stuff in food or drink, and it shouldn't be, you know, advertised as medicinal. But that's not widely enforced, I think it's fair to say.
But why?
The NCABC board has basically said you can't put CBD or any of the cannabinoids in alcohol. Yeah.
Well,
kind of an
issue. According to one of our listeners who just emailed us, absolutely teens are buying THC vapes. My 14-year-old, she says, bought one and a nicotine vape at a Matthews store early this fall. The high school kids can tell you exactly where they can be bought with no ID checks.
I'm sure that's right. I mean, it's similar to cigarettes. Like, there's always a store somewhere that'll sell a minor pack of cigarettes or sell minors beer. So I'm not saying it can't happen or it never happens. I'm just saying most store owners, I think, like Nicole said, they self-police. They take it seriously. They're not trying to distribute to children. But if children get their hands on it, it's not illegal for them to possess it. It's not illegal for them to use it.
Can you do it effectively? Child advocates in North Carolina want the General Assembly to regulate the sale of intoxicating cannabis products to protect children. Nicole, can that be done effectively?
If there is a way to do that and not injure the industry as a whole, I do think there's some ways around that. Packaging, child safety, tops, different warning symbols, and as long as it's across the board and we have a uniform way of assessing these products. I also want to point out that, you know, some of these dispensaries that don't manufacture the products, they're just going off of whoever sells it to them. And so it is a little bit different for those people that are license holders through the USDA, where that's where the responsibility falls on their shoulders. And that's tough, because when we make products and someone else then takes them and packages them differently or some other way, yeah, that's concerning, and that's not supposed to happen. It doesn't, you know, I don't know with what frequency that's happening. I think most people in the industry are self-policing, but there are definitely some loopholes that can be shored up. We're not inventing the wheel here. The other states are doing this successfully already.
Yeah.
The House actually passed a bill this year, or last year, that created a regulatory scheme that I believe had the support of the hemp industry, but the House and Senate couldn't agree on it. And so we're left with just, you know, what little regulations exist now.
Steve, Nicole may have already answered my question here, but Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell, who authored that 2018 Farm Bill, which created this industry essentially, and who also wrote the regulation that will end it, says that he wrote that law and it created a loophole for this industry, and now he says the industry has exploited that loophole. That mandates no more than 0.3% of THC in any of these products. How have they allegedly exploited the loophole?
I Nicole was talking earlier and she was saying, look, everyone is doing this by the rules. And so I think you could use the word exploit based on kind of we couldn't necessarily envision this as the way it would turn out and the way it would be so popular. But I think that the growers and the manufacturers are following the rules, because Nicole, and I mean, maybe I'll let Nicole go back to this. She was explaining earlier about some of the detailed rules about when you measure THC content in plants, that you're allowed to measure it before, I think it's, Nicole, like 30 days before you harvest the plant. And then after that, the THC content continues to grow. But again, that is legal. Whether it's you're exploiting a loophole or not, that's a judgment call.
I've read all these quotes from the governor and from the attorney general and from you, Phil Dixon. And all three of you have used the term wild, wild west when it comes to this industry. Why do you see that the industry that way?
Well, it's exactly what we're talking about. I mean, there's very little other than the industry self-policing it. You know, there's not a lot of rules in place.
Couldn't the problem that might be created by this latest funding bill be solved by better regulation?
That would be an option, yeah. And I also think you might see the federal government decide to leave it to the states, just like they do with marijuana now. I mean, marijuana remains illegal in a Schedule I under federal law, but yeah. Federal government doesn't enforce that law in states where people are operating pursuant to a state legal scheme. That might be the answer if North Carolina decides as a state, we want to continue some version of the hemp industry with guardrails in place. There may be a similar compromise with the federal government where they agree to let people follow the state rules.
Governor Stein has announced the State Advisory Council in order to bring order to the cannabis market. Steve, he deliberately uses the term cannabis to include both intoxicating THC products and marijuana so that the state can reach some coherent policy involving both products and their use by adults. Where does that effort stand at the moment, and wouldn't it be rendered impotent by any change in federal law?
Yeah, in theory, what just happened in November would if it's enforced, we'll make it moot because all these products would be banned. I'm not sure of the status of his task force and where that stands right now. As Phil talked about earlier, the General Assembly has tried on this. The Senate, Phil Berger, has supported legislation to do a complete ban as well. That didn't go anywhere. The House bill to put in some regulations couldn't pass the Senate. North Carolina is an interesting place because a lot of other states have moved on this in some level, either through bans or slight small regulation. And North Carolina up until this point has just not done it.
Well, and I think we want it. I mean, and that's what I'm hearing, not just, I'm speaking for myself, but then also other growers and other business owners. I mean, and when I hear you use the word exploit, I hear that, but in my mind, that's entrepreneurial enterprise. I don't think that there is a complete ban is just not a good option. And I don't know why we would have to go nuclear here. Again, other states have successfully navigated this. And if this is about taxes, there's a way to do that too.
This spending bill that will effectively end, if nothing changes, this industry in November is coming along, Phil, at the same time that several bills are working their way through Congress that aim to legalize or prepare for the legalization of marijuana for recreational use. One of those bills would remove marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act entirely. Another would reduce penalties for possession and use. And Donald Trump has issued an executive order that would move marijuana from a Schedule I to a Schedule III drug. How do you explain this dichotomy? Why go after one industry and not the other?
Well, I think both on the federal and state level, there's always people that are trying to legalize marijuana altogether. And that might have widespread popular support, but I don't think it really has support in the legislatures, either federally or state, a complete legalization of marijuana. But the executive order is interesting because it's pretty inconsistent. It's hard to square that with the provisions in the CR.
I'm really short on time, Nicole, but I want to get your perspective on something else here, because you have said that these new regulations, which would criminalize the sale of hemp products containing more than 0.4 milligrams of total THC, would cripple the industry. But hemp is a miracle product. Somebody made a car out of hemp a long, long time ago. You can do almost anything with it, and you grow hemp. Would it cripple the industry, or would you just find other non-consumption uses for it?
It would cripple the industry. I mean, it's used. So there's the fiber industry, the CBD industry. I mean, they're all different. There are companies out there that are making, composite board for building materials and for pet bedding. And there are just so, it's just incredibly exciting that we can take this plant, cannabis sativa L, and create an industries, multiple industries. And it dates back to, is it 6,000 BCE, 8,000 BCE? So this is nothing new. And I do think that there is a way to figure this out where we can let the economy thrive.
And I have 30 seconds left, Nicole, but I understand that you are more optimistic about this not happening in November than many people are. Why?
Yeah. Well, I've been in this industry since 2018, seeing the ups and downs. I think collectively we have all found a way to weather. I do think there needs to be more education in the legislative side of things so that we can come to some agreement, because I do think it's warranted, it's welcomed by myself and other business owners. So
Nicole Burnett is the owner and founder of Queen Hemp Company. Phil Dixon Jr. joined us. He's a teaching associate professor of public law and government at the UNC School of Government. And Steve Harrison was with us, reporter for WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.